I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to another episode of Reno Reality with Mitch and Mark.
It would be Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark.
Oh, fuck. Do it again. Welcome to another episode, an exciting one, of Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark.
You sound all very kind of... there's something secret going on.
No, I'm excited, Mike. We've been back in the world this week. We've been down to, I went to Canberra one day, and then we went to Melbourne and went to that amazing exhibit at the NVG.
Yes, but it was the NGV. National Gallery of Victoria. We were invited to go down to the opening of an exhibition called Queer, which actually looks at artworks through history that, I guess, celebrate or acknowledge same-sex attraction or gender diversity, sexuality. It's really, really interesting. One of the things I loved in it, from a fashion perspective, of course, is it's got the Yves Saint Laurent original women's tuxedo suit that he did in 1966, I think. And apparently when he released it, they only sold like one of those suits. People then couldn't get their heads around it.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun and people dressed up. It was crazy, Mark. It was fun. But we also went to the Melbourne Fashion Week, to the Gentlemen's Quarterly, GQ Parade.
GQ, men's parade.
And we sat in the front row of the parade and I thought to myself, I feel like those people that you see, like when they used to have it on Sex and the City in the front row, I felt like we were those special people.
Somehow, yeah.
It was a heap of fun.
It was a heap of fun. Fortunately, we were supposed to only be down there for one night. We're literally going to fly in at 4 o'clock and fly out the next day. So we stayed on for a day and thank God we had a backup shirt or two.
Yes.
We would have had nothing to wear.
But one of the highlights for our week was when we got invited to go into the broadcast of the Australian Red Cross Flood Appeal. Mm-hmm. Australian Red Cross Flood Appeal, which was the three major networks, 10, 9 and 7 combined, mm-hmm. to come together, and we were on the phones taking calls, and collectively there was almost $26 million yeah. raised.
It's so good. Australians were so generous on that night. We were privileged to be on the phones, but you know, there were the other volunteers who knew exactly what they were doing. I felt a little bit like, oh, my God, I'm not as good as you guys. But we managed to get through, and thank you to everyone who called in and everyone who's donated. If it's $5, $10, $1,000.
Or the one, there was one guy that called through, or guy or girl called through and donated $1 million.
Yeah.
It was incredible. But and people were saying, I've only got $5 to donate, which I got a lot of that. And it's like, seriously? Every $5 counts, and it's not just the dollar value. It's also the fact that we as a nation came together, whatever we could put in, yeah. it was really cool.
It was wonderful. It was the spirit, the Australian spirit. And speaking of that, the guest that we have on our podcast today, I think really embodies elements of that Australian spirit and, you know, has been in the limelight for sport. We are a sporting nation. We love people who excel at sport, and she is a swimmer.
And
has seen the highs and lows of that, because Australians also, you know, we can be very unforgiving if we think somebody's not performed how they should. So, you know, compassion is so important. And this young woman is a delight.
Absolutely. And look, when you talk about the swimming, Mark, this lady has achieved some greatness in swimming that very few swimmers ever achieved.
Only two other people.
Two other women.
Two other Australian women.
Have achieved. And our guest today, if you don't know this name, you should know this name as a proud Aussie, is Emily Seebohm. And
I think you're going to love this talk. She's just a delight, and some really interesting insights in her career and how she approached some challenges.
I have great pleasure in introducing our special guest today, someone who you might be very familiar with from the sporting/swimming world, the incredible enduring, is that the right word?
Enduring, endurance, resilient,
Resilient.
Sparkling. All of those words to describe this.
Emily Seebohm. Welcome, Emily.
Hey.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
So excited because your achievements are incredible. And it's interesting to find out a little bit about that. But most recently, people saw you on I'm a Celeb as well. So we get to see kind of that rounded part of who Emily Seebohm is.
And we met through a sliding doors moment at, was it 9 to 5? The premiere of 9 to 5?
No, we met at, remember we met at The Girl from the North Country. That musical.
Oh.
No, it was good. It was the Alanis Morissette concert.
Oh, it was Jagged Little Pill.
Wasn't it great?
It was so good. I loved it.
Yes.
Do you remember that second act, that young woman's number, the place erupted and stood and cheered for this young woman?
Yes. That girl is actually Kim from, you know, Captain Kim? It's her daughter, Gina Riley.
Somebody told me that and I couldn't remember who it was, but yes, Gina Riley's daughter. She's, for anyone listening, if you're in Melbourne and Jagged Little Pill is on, you must go and see it. And if it's coming to your town in Adelaide or Perth or Brisbane, what do you think, Emily? It's a must see.
100%. You just got hit by the amazing performance that was happening in front of you. Like, I got goosebumps while I was sitting there listening to that. I was like, wow. This is empowering.
Well, I must say, speaking of watching an amazing performance and getting goosebumps, seriously, you have provided so many, many goosebump moments with your amazing performances in the pool.
So, you know, interesting segue. You must have had times, like that young performer, you must have had times where you stood and people are cheering and you have goosebumps. Like, why? How does that feel? Most of us never feel that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I take it back to when I was 16 in Beijing and I made the relay team, which was with Liesl Jones, Libby Trickett, and Jessica Schipper, like legends of this.
Like,
sport.
When you say those names, it's
wow.
Legends.
It's crazy, right? And I was 16. I was still at school. I was just freshly turned 16, the youngest person on that Australian team. The Olympic team, and we, you know, we raced in the 4x1 medley relay. We won, we broke the world record. You know, you're standing on the podium, you're singing the national anthem, and it's just like, you kind of have to pinch yourself and be like, did that just happen?
Yeah.
It's an out of body experience. How many people get one, an Olympic gold medal, two, you're swimming with legendary swimmers, and you are a legendary swimmer, and you break a world record?
Yeah.
It's like, how do you process that?
I don't think you do. At 16, you're just like, oh, wow, I'm so bloody cool right now.
Was it a bit like, I'm so cool?
Yeah. I felt like, I don't know, I felt like the cool kid. I was like, wow, this is what it must feel like to be the cool kid at school.
But then Olympics after Olympics, you did it again. Did you ever stop pinching yourself or did it feel normal or did you expect it?
I don't think it ever feels normal because you go in there and you know what you want. You have a goal and you want to achieve that, but you can't control what's happening around you. You can't control what other people are doing. You have no idea how people are swimming, if they're going to swim fast, if you're going to swim fast. So you kind of always have a goal, but you never know if that goal is going to be achieved. You just can't control what happens around you. So I feel like every time I got up there, I just felt really blessed. I just felt like, wow, this is amazing. I'm still here. This is awesome. This doesn't happen all the time. And I think after Rio and not swimming so well in Rio and then coming back and winning the bronze medal in Tokyo, it was kind of like, okay, I actually realized that it doesn't happen a lot and you really got to relish what the opportunity that you have standing on that podium because, you know, you never know when that's going to happen again. It's not guaranteed ever.
And isn't it amazing the way you say after Rio not swimming so well, you still swam frigging amazingly.
You're still at an
but someone swam better.
Yeah, correct. I mean, I was coming off being world number one the year before. So when you kind of go in world number one into an Olympics, that's a whole different experience. And I think I came away with, I think, seventh all up in the 100 backstroke, which is, I know, is still amazing. Like, you're making it to the Olympics, you're coming seventh. but it's not what you dream for and it's not what you train for. And I think, you know, it gives you an appreciation to be like, when I get back up there, I'm going to work so hard to get there. And then when you get to enjoy that moment, it's like, wow, I deserve this. I worked so hard for this.
How do you regain yourself? What if you had to say to somebody else, this is how I regained who I was and got the value in my achievements after that?
I think for me, it was kind of something that I needed. I've always been not lucky, but I've always worked really hard. And sometimes you can get complacent in working hard and you don't want to change things up because it's working for you and you don't think you need to do anything different. But sometimes when you get a setback like that or you don't perform how you think you could, it gives you a bit of a shake up to be like, okay, I need to do something different because this now isn't working for me. And there's only so long you can do the same thing and the same thing and the same thing and expect a different result. You're going to get the same result, right? So for me, it was like a really good opportunity to be like, okay, what can I add into my program that's going to make that little bit of a difference? Like we're talking about like a split second. We're talking about 0.10 of a second, 0.2 of a second. We're talking about a snap of the finger. That's all I need to make up. So it's not talking massive amounts, but it's like, how can you find that and do something a little bit different to get that little bit extra? So yeah, for me, it was an opportunity to change and grow. And I think being in the sport for so long, I was 14 when I first made the Australian team and now I'm 29. It's like you can't do what you were doing at 14 and expect to do the same thing at 29. And, you know, when I was 14, PBs came really easy because I was so young and I was just having fun. And then you kind of move to when you're in your late 20s and it's not as easy to do a PB or it doesn't come as often. And you can't take that as negative feedback because you're not trying to get to that point every time. You're trying to slowly work your way back to that.
Well, with 53 medals on the world stage, seven of which the Olympic ones, which we most of us know about, but 53 world stage medals. What do you do with all those things?
Look, I won't lie to you. They are out at my mom and dad's house. It's like a shrine. It's like a shrine. It's like I've died or something. And they just put everything up on the walls and just everywhere. But they do have three dogs, so there is security there. They would definitely alarm us if someone was trying to take them. But yeah, I'm not much of a show off, so I really don't look at them. And it's funny that when I need them for an appearance or I take them to a clinic or something, I'm like, oh wow, these are really cool. Like, gives me an opportunity to look at them, because otherwise I don't. It's not really, I don't know, I don't do it for the medals. I do it for the love of it. I've always been super competitive. I've got three brothers, so everything in my life.
Three brothers, right.
Yeah, a race for everything. A race to finish dinner, a race to get on the internet, a race to, you know, pick up the phone first, whatever it might be. It's always been a race for me. So it's just how I lived.
So you were born to be successful.
I was born to be competitive. I don't know if I was born to be successful. I think that comes from dedication and determination. And I think at a point I realized that the work was the most important part and the racing was kind of second to the work. The beginning I always thought racing was the most important part, but unless you're going to do the training, you can't get out there and do the racing well.
So your focus was get that training done, the work, and the racing was just what cream on the cake. It just happened because you did all the work.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I guess if I compare it to being in a job, it'd be like preparing for a big speech or preparing for a big case, whatever it might be. You've got to prepare for that because you can't just go into that and hope that it's all going to happen because you've done a few before. You've got to actually do the work so you know what you're doing when you get out there.
Emily, you said something earlier which I thought was really interesting when you said standing on the podium that first time as the youngest, you were the youngest swimmer on the Olympic team?
I was the youngest athlete on that Australian team.
So that's amazing, the youngest athlete. And you were standing, you said, oh, wow, it's so cool. It's like I'm now one of the cool kids. Did you ever feel like you were a cool kid or did you always feel like you weren't a cool kid?
Look, growing up, I had glasses, braces.
Oh.
I was like abnormally tall for my age. So I was always like the tallest kid, you know, back row for you.
Yeah.
In the photos, you know, I never got to be the cute little kid that sits their little hands on their lap. For the photos, I was the kid standing in the back, like the tallest one there. So I never really felt like a cool kid because of that. I don't know. Like, I just didn't feel like I found my place until I found swimming and I found somewhere where I could be like, okay, like I'm pretty good at this.
Well, you are one of the cool kids now, just a heads up. But
maybe I'm not.
But the training is so intense, and I did read that you said that for your kids that you intend on doing one day, but you said you wouldn't necessarily want them to get into swimming.
I think it's really hard for me because obviously I want them to know how to swim. I want to share my passion with them. But I think if I was to push them into swimming, I don't want them to feel like they have a certain level that they got to live up to. And if they don't reach that, then they're unsuccessful. That's just what I did. You know, they might not be amazing swimmers, and that's okay. Their sport might be something else. They might not even be into sport. They might want to do something completely different. And I don't want them to feel like they have to live up to this certain level that's really what a couple of percent of the world is able to do. And it's only because, you know, I found my passion really early in life. And I think everyone has their different skill sets. And I just think I want them to be able to pick what they want to do. I don't want to have to push them mm-hmm. into swimming because that's what I did.
Listening to you talk about them, it's just like it's a given that that this is going to be part of your life.
No, I love kids. I taught Learn to Swim as I was training as well. So I love kids. I want to have kids. I don't know if you guys know, but I have endometriosis, so I know that could be quite difficult for me. So, yeah, I mean, it's just something that I'm going to have to deal with when that time comes about.
Another challenge.
Just another stepping stone in life, right? We all have our challenges we've got to go through.
I'm interested, Emily, one thing I'm really curious about, because watching swimming and growing up, you know, I remember as Australians, we adore our swimmers and watching the Olympics. And there's a lot of pressure on swimmers for both of those things. Swimming is so much at the heart, I think, of Australians' love of sport. But I will often watch, and, you know, I can swim, but no, not that good.
You know, I'm all right. I think you're quite good. You're quite good.
No, all right. Yeah. I can't even conceive of how you can do backstroke and be at that level. But often you see swimmers, you know, at that elite level, and it's like they're in a zone. It just flows. Is that a feeling that you get when you're swimming? Does time stand still? Like, what does that feel like?
I think for me personally, we prepare as if, you know, heading into a meet, we kind of start going down in our Ks. So instead of doing 6K, we might slowly go down 5K, then 4K. And then just before racing, we kind of only do little bits of work. So we're really fresh for when we go out there. So sometimes racing can feel completely different. Sometimes you can hit a peak, like a really good peak, and know you're in the zone. Sometimes you can be just a little bit off and you can feel heavy in the water, or you can feel really slow. It really depends. But, yeah, it's totally different. I think, you know, you always to feel really good before racing, but sometimes you might not feel that good. And it's a matter of kind of switching on your brain to be like, it doesn't matter at this point. You've done all the work. At this point, it's just about going out there and doing it. And if you're telling yourself, oh, I'm not feeling good, then you really start believing that. Whereas if you can tell yourself, oh, I'm feeling really good, even though you might not be feeling 100%, mm-hmm. you're kind of convincing yourself before you go out there that you feel mm-hmm. all right.
And whatever shit's going on in your life, you can just, you have the capacity to turn that off, and that doesn't exist in that moment when you're about to dive in the pool. That's gone.
Yeah, when you're out there, you really don't, you can't think of anything almost. You're kind of just like blank, and you're just staring at your lane, and you're like, okay, this is what I've got to do. you basically get in there, you don't think, and then maybe when you start swimming a bit, sometimes I start thinking. Most of the time I'm singing in my head. It's not really helpful at me whatsoever, but anyway.
Are you, so in an Olympic final, like your head, because it's so quick, obviously, you're singing along as you're going.
Yeah, sometimes. Normally there's a camera on the roof that's kind of like one of those spider cams, so it moves along and can go side to side. So normally, because we swim backstroke, we can see it. So if it's in front of you, you're slow. If it's, you know, dead on to you, you're pretty much in the pack. So you can kind of work out where you are.
Oh, the camera gives you a sign of where you are.
It does, yeah. It's pretty handy.
So it tells you to pull your finger out and push harder if you need to.
Do you have a favourite song?
Look, it's probably something that I've heard that day, but I love Taylor Swift, so it's usually Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift is part of the success of Emily Seebohm, see?
Correct, yeah.
What does it feel like to know you're one of only, what is it, three swimmers who've ever been to four Olympics? There's Liesl Jones, is that right? You,
yeah.
And I don't recall, I was trying to find
Kate Campbell.
Kate Campbell. Yeah. What an elite group, and women to do that. Australian women are so strong.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy when you start at 16. Like, it's not possible to go that far. But, I mean, it's crazy to think about that, how much time that's been. We think about, you know, each Olympic cycle is 4 years, so doing four of them is a really long time. Don't tell me how long it is. But, I don't know, like, I guess I set my sights on doing four. That's what I wanted to do when I kind of first started making the team. And when I made my first Olympics, it was pretty possible that I could go to four and still be, you know, kind of in the prime of my life. So, yeah, I mean, it was just something that I wanted to do. It was a goal that I set. And when I saw Liesl did it, I was like, okay, well, this gives me the opportunity and the chance to believe that I can do it too.
How many have done five?
No Australians yet.
Do you think we might see one?
Maybe. Yay! I haven't said no to anything. That's my thing. I just don't say no.
We could. We can meet you in Paris. There's a great falafel bar in Paris. We'll meet you there.
Okay.
After the finals.
After swimming, of course.
After the swimming, yeah. There's a few other bars we'll take after the swimming to celebrate.
But, you know, when you're saying that was possible because you started at 16, of course, in terms of time, yes, it is possible. But in terms of physical strength and resilience and mental strength and resilience, it's not.
Yeah.
It takes a lot. You started swimming. How old were you started swimming?
I made my first Australian junior team at 11, and I made my first senior team at 14. And
14.
Yeah.
So your life, if I assume I look and go, your life is swimming. Has been swimming. Yeah. There's a whole bubble, and it's an elite swimming. What's it like to transition, or to think about transitioning, if I can use the term, back to normal life, whatever normal is?
I'm kind of working that out. That's what this year is for me. This year is basically working out where I want to go after swimming. If I choose to retire now, or I swim on to the next Olympics and then retire, I need to know where I want to go. I've never not been swimming. I've swum every year since making the team. So it's kind of, you know, this is my year to work out what I like, what I don't like, what I want to go to, what I don't want to work in. You know, it's basically saying yes to everything so I know which direction I want to go in.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And having just done I'm a Celebrity, when you look at your career, it's such a minimal part of your career. But how does that change you now doing that? And has it changed people's reaction to you? You know, doing reality TV, people all of a sudden seem to know who you are, but they already should have known who you were? Did it change?
It's funny that I get recognized more for being on I'm a Celebrity than being a four-time Olympian. People always come up to me and be like, oh, you're on that show in the jungle. And I'm like, yeah. But wow, I was doing way longer than I was on this TV show for. But that show gave me the opportunity to open up to people, for people to know more about me, more about my personality than just being that swimmer. And that was my whole driving force in doing that show, was to show people more of myself, for people to understand me more, for people to see my personality and really resonate with some points that they might like about me. You know, obviously there's things people don't like about me, but it's whatever, right? Because it's just who I am, and I love who I am, and I just wanted people to find out more about me.
And people definitely did, because you were brave, and I think it's brave to talk about the eating disorder that you dealt with, because your charity was NED, which I think is local to where you live. It's a local charity.
So it was actually NED, which is the charity I chose for I'm a Celeb, which is kind of, they call it the House of Hope. So it's a place where people can go, whether it's, you know, you personally struggling with an eating disorder, whether it's family or friends, to get support. They have support groups there. They really have lots of information and lots of places that you can go to and people to talk to, which is really lovely. But it happened to be a girl that I went to school with, parents who started the foundation. So when I opened up about my eating disorder, they reached out to me. So I was like, wow, it's kind of nice that I know someone in a charity and that I can actually try and really help and bring that charity kind of more light, because it is just a very small charity on the Sunshine Coast, which is very close to where I was living in Brisbane.
And when you came out publicly talking about an eating disorder, did you find that there were so many other people around you that had also suffered from the same type of disorder that's kind of not spoken about? It's swept under the carpet?
Yeah. So when I first opened up about it on my Instagram, I received so many messages, so many comments on my photo of people that were struggling. I get emails still from families that are looking for places for support, and I, you know, send them to NED where they can get that support that they need. So it's really good for me to be able to keep sharing my story, for people to understand it more, for people to maybe resonate with it, and then they can understand that, you know what, anyone can get this. It's not just, you know, an elite athlete that's getting this. It's, you know, normal people struggle with it too. So if they can feel more comfortable in talking to someone, because I'm doing it on TV or wherever it might be, the platform that I'm using, then it's important for people to read that story, understand it, and then maybe they can help other people getting support.
It's kind of a bit like coming out, isn't it? Like,
well, you said that when you came out.
It is coming out.
It is. Sharing something very personal about yourself in a public stage, because you've been a public figure for so long, basically, since 14 being on your first national team. I'm curious, what were the thoughts in your head that impacted or influenced the eating disorder at the time? Like, what were you saying to yourself?
It wasn't so much me telling myself anything to begin with. It was comments from other people. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, a comment from the coach that I was training with at the time saying, the only way you're going to swim faster is to lose weight or be at this specific weight. And then that kind of started my snowball in my own head of, okay, this doesn't look right at what I'm looking at right now. I need to look different than this. And then it was kind of like just, you know, the negative self-talk where it's like, you don't look good enough, you're never going to achieve what you want because you're not the weight that you should be. And then it was weighing in constantly and then being angry at myself with whatever I saw because that was never good enough.
So it's kind of like, for me to be okay, I need to be different to this. This is not okay. Who I am is not all right. And I have to change that.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you start getting weighed in front of boys at the pool and you get, you know, completely like different measures, we were getting skin folds, which is, I don't know if you've ever know that. It's like pulling your skin and then they measure how much skin is there, and they were doing that on pool deck. And it was just a lot of stuff all the time, and it just got to a point where it was like, I can't control what my thoughts in my head anymore, because they're just all the time.
They were spiraling out of control. Why were they weighing and measuring in public in front of people?
They just, you know, they didn't see a problem with it, and I guess no one was willing to be like, oh, that this is, I don't like this.
That's not okay. And you're young women, I mean, young people going through that kind of puberty through that era are conscious enough about their bodies, but you're being weighed in your swim togs, I'm figuring, in front of other people, and it's being a measure about whether it's good enough. It's like, no wonder those thoughts get created and go through your head. And the reason I'm interested, I guess, in it is there are so many people, and many people that might be listening to this, where they're trying to control and manage negative thoughts, because often we're driven by, we want to be loved, we want to be acknowledged, we want to be, mainly it's be loved and supported. And a lot of people have similar things. If only I was different, it would be better. If only what? But how did you break that cycle? How did you go, those thoughts are not real?
I guess it wasn't until I actually started asking for help that I could realize what I was doing to myself was mistreating myself. And I went and spoke to a dietitian and said, this is what's happening. This is where I need to be, and I'm not getting there. And she's just like, okay, let me ask you questions about yourself. Like, when was the last time you had a period? And I was like, well, it's probably been like a year and a half. And she's like, well, that's not okay. And she explained to me this, what I was putting my body through. My body was trying to shut down things that it couldn't use because it didn't have enough energy to be able to work everything at once. So when you start being like, okay, by doing that, your bones can get really weak from not eating enough, so you could break your bones really easily. So I had to have all these bone tests. I had to have blood tests because, you know, if you're not eating properly, if you're not eating red meat, you lose iron, which creates fatigue and tiredness in your body. And it's just, it was a snowball effect that I had no idea, because I didn't care about that. I cared about getting to this certain point. I didn't care about my health as such. I just wanted to get to that point and be like, oh, I did it.
That became the sacrifice for, I got there and I got the weight or the skin fold measure you wanted, because my goal is to be at the next Olympics or the next. So this is all while you're swimming at elite level.
Yes.
Wow. So we're watching you and people are celebrating what you're doing, and you had some lows in there, and all the time you're trying to manage this in your head, and you're 18 or 19.
I was, how old was I? This was 2018.
Yeah, it was more recent.
I think I was about 25.
Which
I really get angry about it, because I'm like, I should have known better at that stage of my life. Like, I'm a woman. I should not be, at first I was angry about the comments. I was pissed off. And then I started believing them. I was like, okay, well, maybe they're right here. But I should have stayed in that state where I was like, why is a man telling me that I have to be a certain weight? How does he know that at that weight I'm going to swim well? He has no idea. He's just throwing something out there because he might have not had anything else for me. He didn't know where to go to, and he was just like, well, this is just a different option we haven't done before.
But it was also on the back of a very public breakup. So you're at a vulnerable point in life. So if someone's going to tell you, you'll be better if you do this, there was probably a whole lot of stuff going on in your head that you're a victim.
It's true. Can I ask you, mention then, why is this man telling me if I do that, I'll be better? Do you think there's any gender issue in that? Was it men who were influencing that?
Well, it was a male coach. It was male people taking all our measurements. So it doesn't obviously make it easy trying to talk to a male about it. And, he wasn't really taking on board the things he was saying, like, you know, telling me to eat a banana less a day, putting up how many calories were in a banana. Like, yeah. That's quite triggering.
Yeah.
Obviously, at that time, I wasn't really fully developed into stuff, but that kind of made me snowball, because then I started looking at calories and things and being like, I can't eat that. And we're talking about a banana, banana that has so many nutrients in it. We're talking about dropping a banana out of my diet a day. And then, you know, one of the other comments was, why don't I look like another girl? And she was 12.
She was 12.
Yeah.
You're 25. And why don't you physically look like her?
I look like that. Yes.
That's outrageous.
She's not developed, for one.
So it's stuff like that where I was like, why didn't fight back on that? But it was like, this was someone that I believed in their methods, that their coaching had got me to some amazing level.
Yes.
You know, it's someone that I believed in. And I guess, that's where I went wrong. I believed for maybe too long, and I believed in the wrong thing.
Maybe, but, you know, it's interesting you're saying feeling angry at yourself. You believe you had achieved so much, there was no reason not to believe. And, you know, there's a point where compassion is so important, and compassion towards yourself is important. You've achieved so much. As I'm listening to you, I just think, how many other young women in that industry, I'll call it the industry of Olympic swimming, could benefit from you as a role model? Like, you have a lot to share, and not just your swimming achievements, but your emotional resilience and your mental journey. Imagine a young woman now at 14 starting in her career, having you as her, and I'm not thinking swim coach, as her personal coach.
Yeah.
That would be a gift for somebody. And the other thing, I guess, I think about when you talk about anger, and I've often talked to people about that in my career, and we've seen it with, you know, gay people going through the coming out process, anger is actually good. What you do with it to motivate you. Some people use it to motivate different success, but, you know, sometimes it's like, it's okay to go, actually, that was not okay.
Yeah.
And compassion to yourself about, you managed that journey the best you could to achieve incredible things.
Yeah.
And you now have all of those gifts as you transition to the new life.
The new life? It's like the new world.
No, it is. It's like this new Emily, look at all these abilities that you have. You've talked about goal setting. You've talked about that emotional resilience. You've talked about the internal thinking and how you make that positive, about preparation and all the preparation. That means when you get to that final swim meet or final presentation, you're on board. You know what you're doing. These are all amazing things. You know, you talked earlier, which I think is really interesting, is about control, what you can control and what you can't control. And for a lot of people, they need to hear that. Because a lot of us, you know, we get anxiety about things that we haven't understood we don't control, and being able to make the distinction. And you've had to learn that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I used to get anxiety all the time when I raced, because I was always thinking about the outcome before I was even in the pool. So you've got to take a step back and just get in there and swim in your own lane. You're in your own lane. You can't touch anyone. No one else can touch you, but you can't control what happens around you either.
I think it's a great metaphor for many people in life. It's like they're in their own lane. Emily, it'd be interesting, you know, now you're 29. If you went back and talked to Emily at 16, is there something you would say to her that you think would make a difference?
I get this question a fair bit, but I wish that 16-year-old Emily could come back and tell 29-year-old Emily to just enjoy herself, because at a point, swimming became my income, became my job, and my job relied on me doing well. And if I didn't do well, then I didn't make any money. But at 16, I didn't care about that. I didn't think about those things. But, you know, when you reach a certain age, you buy your own house or buy your own apartment, you've got to think about rent, food, you've got to cook food, you've got to, you know, have a car to drive to training, petrol, all those things start coming in, and then you start overwhelming yourself. But if I went back to when I was 16, I would just be relaxed, because I didn't have to worry about anything else. I just had to do what I knew what I was doing, because I loved it.
But it's also, is it true, Emily, that I hear that swimmers, elite swimmers, make very little money unless they supplement it with outside work, which just seems, if it's true, that seems amazing, because we hold our Olympic athletes and swimmers in particular in such high regard, on such a pedestal, yet payment is poor.
Yeah, I spoke on this on I'm a Celeb. Our swimming contracts are 30 or 35. I think they've just gone up this year to 50 for the first time. So that's our swimming contract to make the team, and that's top level of making the team. So that's 1 to 8 in the world. You've got to be in that 1 to 8 time in the world to get that money.
So you have to be – so a swimmer – has to be in the top 8 in terms of their time in that year, their swim time, to get a contract that's $50,000.
Yes. You have to swim that time every year too.
Every year. You know what cracks me up when I listen to this? And, you know, hopefully this doesn't offend people, but it might. How much does the Australian cricket captain get paid? How much do NRL footballers get paid? And I know there's a whole lot of industry that goes around that, and I get it. But we're here sitting talking to, you know, one of only 3 women or athletes that have been to 4 Olympics that have had that many medals. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How do you retain the knowledge and the experience in the swimming industry? Because what you offer and Liesl Jones offers and Kate Campbell and, you know, Ian Thorpe, people back into the industry, if we consider it as an industry, is invaluable. Yeah. It's like the CEOs, you would be paid huge amounts of money.
Yeah.
But you're not. So you have to make your way now in a different way.
Well, for me personally, I always travel overseas and do lots of racing overseas. So I'll spend about 6 months of a year up, you know, in Europe or wherever it might be doing meets for money. So I'm constantly racing to make my money so I can at least not have to do another job, because when I'm here, it's hard to get a job that's going to allow you to come in from, let's say, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's all the hours that you can do with around swimming. And then you've got to have a job that's going to allow you to travel also. For when we travel for an Olympic Games, we're gone for a month, maybe more. Mm-hmm. So it's like no one's going to allow us to do that.
It's pretty amazing.
I'm amazed. My brain, and having worked in a corporate area, just goes, imagine if you had an Emily Seebohm or at least Will Jones on your team as part of your staff development programs. You're developing young people, particularly young women, in corporate culture through into leadership. Imagine if part of that is that you have these elite athletes as your coach, your corporate coaches, and what you can teach them about it. Wouldn't that be amazing? That would be a huge opportunity.
I think Mark's doing an ad here for you.
Yeah, I think so. Plug me in.
It is, but it's so true. I mean, if anyone's listening, you know, I hope people like Commonwealth Bank or, you know, banking, financial institutions, you have women. We're talking about equity and having more women in corporate settings, more women in leadership roles. We have them already. They're called elite swimmers.
Yeah.
Use, you know, everything you've learned about your commitment and dedication, you know, the kind of resilience, the emotional resilience you've had to deal with, surely someone out there understands. You guys are assets. Anyway, that's enough of my rave, but I think it's so true.
You did well. You did really well. I enjoyed that.
I'm still in shock about that. So the women in our team, Australian women, have been amazing. And we should be celebrating that. You went through a shit time too, where if you don't, it's tall poppy. If you don't succeed, then people go, oh, maybe that's not right. But what I love about talking to you is you've been through that. You've regained yourself and you came back and you valued so much your Tokyo experience. And it tells you the quality of the person. It tells you you have something that you can share with people about resilience, emotional maturity and strength. And that's when I get on my soapbox, because I think it's so important. So many people in their lives, you know, and through COVID too, people are feeling it's just been so tough, like the floods, everyone is just feeling so down, and we need to just, how do we keep that resilience and that hope going?
Yeah, I think, it's hard. It's been a really,
extremely hard time in everyone's lives, and we're just dealing with it the best that we can. And if you can take solace in listening to other people's stories about how they found their way, navigated through it, then that's amazing. That's something we all need.
Do you have a certain words of hope or something that you would share with people listening? There are people listening now, and some of them who probably are feeling down. What are your words of hope?
I guess the best thing I can say is just, you know, try and smile and laugh at something during that day. Don't go the whole day without being able to enjoy something about it. There's going to be days that are really hard and you either don't want to get out of bed or you don't want to go to work. But if you can try and find a positive in there, whether it's, you know, walking to work and something makes you smile, or you hear someone else's conversation, it gives you a bit of a chuckle because it reminds you of something or someone in your life, then that's so important. And I think if you can do that and if you can get through that day, then you've just done something to make yourself feel better.
That was such wise words from an old soul, Emily.
Yeah. When I first met you and then having you come today, I was very starstruck, because to me it's like, this is an amazing woman who has achieved so much. It's like, oh my God, she's like, I've watched her swim. I've watched her. So I was very starstruck. The more I listen to you, I become more starstruck, but more about the quality of who you are as a woman and as a human being has me more starstruck now than those achievements, which are incredible.
I was starstruck too, Emily, and that night you were wearing a very fabulous dress and you had very high heels on. And I was starstruck that I was standing there next to you, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, her top of her leg in her short dress is next to my shoulder. I just felt like a midget.
Stop it.
So, Emily, by way of us wrapping up, for you, doing I'm a Celeb, such a different fish out of water experience. Is there something that happened or something you took from that that you didn't expect to get from the experience? Something that you went, wow, I didn't expect to learn that about me or somebody else?
I think for me it was the fact that I went in there, it was straight after the Olympics. Like, I was only home about a week after the Olympics. So for me it was just a great opportunity to be like, okay, this is a chance to open up and to really express myself in a different way. And because the Olympics has just happened, it's an opportunity for me to be able to think about what's happened, where I want to go with my life, what I see myself doing. And it was an opportunity for me where I felt like I grew as a person outside of swimming, because I was not able to do that and I wasn't able to exercise and do the normal stuff that I would do. So it was an opportunity for me to just actually relax, not have anything to go to, not have to go work out, not have to eat a certain way. It was just a moment where I got to myself and I was like, oh, wow, like this is who I am without swimming.
And did you feel under the microscope of cameras on you pretty much 24/7 on that program? How did that feel without any moments to yourself? Every word you said was recorded. And
yeah, well, you kind of forgot about it really, because they were all hidden cameras. And I don't know, when I had conversations with people, I wasn't like, oh, wow, I got to be worried about what I'm saying here. I was just kind of enjoying getting to know people and asking questions and really sharing about myself, because I was like, anything that I share, someone might resonate with that and really enjoy hearing that side of being a swimmer or just being my normal Emily self.
Emily, we're called reality runner because we often talk to people about property as well, but we get a whole lot of stories about them, which is sometimes far more interesting. Do you have property goals? Do you enjoy property, or is it something that you go, I just want to live somewhere nice and not have to think about it? And do you have a particular design style you like?
Okay, this is so hard because I feel like I haven't had an opportunity to find out my personal style with a home yet, because I'm not in a home long enough to change things. Or, I mean, I live in a house at the moment. I've had this house since 2018, and I think I've only recently just put up one photo of myself in the house, and I just like haven't made it my own yet, because I'm not there long enough to be able to start a project and finish it. So I think for me, I would really like to see myself
do something. I don't think I could design a house because I've, you know, played The Sims a few times and my houses don't work out very well in that game. So I'm hoping that I can talk to someone about the kind of style that I like. I like really bright, fresh homes. I like crisp colors. I don't know if I'm very adventurous when it comes to my house because I just, all I think about is Instagram and that's so bad. I want a house where I can be like, you know, anywhere and be like, hey guys, I'm just in my house and it looks really cool.
You want an Instagrammable house.
That's what I want.
Emily, if there's any consolation, we do a bit of filming here at home sometimes and we do posts from home and we've and our home was featured in an article of in Woman's Day at home with Mitch and Mark in their beautiful luxury beachside home at Newport Beach in Sydney. Right. We had to find a corner of the house focusing on the view, moving in pieces of furniture that, and decor items that we took out of the shop because our house is so much potential, but quite frankly, currently it is a house with amazing view, but apart from that, it's a shithole. So Emily, we've been around the world with you on swimming and winning medals all over the place. We've done I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. What is next? Where would you like to see yourself going? And apart from selfishly, I'd like it to be going to Paris for the Olympics, but what's next for you?
Look, my ideal dream, my big dream would be to host the show Getaway because I love travel. I have traveled a lot with swimming, but I've never really gotten to see the places that I travel to. So I'm really adventurous. I really love a thrill. So for me, it would be being able to do that show my personality and also travel the world. I mean, what would be a better show than that, right?
It's a good gig. Or Travel Guides, Emily Seabom on Travel Guides.
That would be amazing. I was actually right next to the guys on Travel Guides doing the phone, the Red Cross Australia flood appeal. I was right next to them and they were making good money on the phone. So they maybe well, that's where I need to go.
Everyone listening, Emily was on the phones on Saturday night. You were in the zone. You were doing really well.
Many of you guys.
I was back to back with you and you were getting some great donations. I am every donation counts, but I seem to get a lot of the $5 ones.
I know you said that, but $5 after $5 after absolutely. $5 is still something.
And I heard people jump up and say, another $20,000. And I thought, stuff this. And I said, and another $5 from me.
Correct.
True.
I was only getting 50s, but, you know, it was so nice to just be there and to have people tell you, oh, this is all I've got to donate. And it's just like, well, it doesn't matter how much you donate because that is just helping everyone else see, oh, this person donated $5. I can do that too.
It was wonderful, wasn't it? People who were saying that and would say, it's only $5. No, it's not only. It's $5.
And it was also the spirit. Yes. Now, the spirit of Australia. Yeah.
The spirit of Australia was amazing. So
it was strong.
We will be looking forward to seeing you in your next career. Again, if anyone from corporate is listening in here or if somebody who knows somebody from corporate, you need Emily Seabom as your coach for women in leadership. I reckon it would be amazing.
Or the EP, executive producer of Getaway, Emily Seabom. Yes.
I'm free. I'm available.
It would be great. Or Emily Seabom on the block. I still reckon
that. Yes.
Yeah.
That would be, I'd love to see that. Emily, thank you so much for sharing time with us. It's been, we always say it's a delight. It's been amazing and been so insightful for me. I really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you.
Likewise, Emily. It sounds like you have learnt to love yourself, which is so good to hear because you are very worthy of your own love.
Thank you.
We'll see you at dinner.
Yes, we'll see you soon.
Mitchie, I found that interview with Emily just so insightful. You could probably tell very passionate about some of the issues that she raised. She's intelligent. She's clever. She's delightful. She's got just a wonderful sense of humor.
Mikey, yeah, I agree. It was just, wow. Super impressive, Mark.
Oh, and I meant it when I said any corporate that needs somebody to help coach young women in leadership roles, these are the people you need. They've performed on a world stage and they've dealt with media scrutiny. We will have our notes, our podcast notes, will have links for Emily and some of the things that she's spoken about.
But Mike, and also I'd say young people, yes. Not just young women, young people. I think I totally agree. Such a beautiful, open young person. And it was such a joy to talk to her and hear her journey and also her journey to get to where she is today, but also in reflecting back rather than tell her 16-year-old self what the 16-year-old self should be doing. She'd rather listen to her 16-year-old self about what she as an adult should be doing now.
And be ready for it as well. I think the thing I also found, you know, for me concerning is that as a young woman, and I keep saying as a young woman because I think there are differences from a gender perspective, that she's being weighed and fat folds checked in public in front of other people as part of her swimming career and potentially male coaches. It's like, this is not okay.
Well, Mike, it was the trigger for an eating disorder.
Yeah, it has to change. That is not how we treat people. That is not how we should be supporting each other.
I couldn't help but think, Mike, when Emily said that that the coach said you need to lose weight to do better, there might have been truth in that, that was one of the ways she could improve her swimming if she actually got lighter. But it's a delicate topic. If you get lighter,
a 12-year-old here, you should look like that. A 12-year-old.
Oh, I know.
Anyway, that's enough from us. But you know, thank you so much for listening to us this week on Reality Reno. We look forward to having you as guests of ours to listen to our next episode.
But also, would love to thank some of the people who've been writing in some great comments and great feedback. There was one from Bob and Dolly, and they said that it was great to get other insight on our experience on the block. But also you're saying you can't wait to follow our own renovations. Us too. It's lingering. We've got everything else gets in the way. But thanks for your feedback, guys.
It is, Amici. We also had another review from Inspired to Be Better, who said they're loving hearing the different personalities and the background stories of our guests. And we really like to do that, is to find out a little more and go a little deeper about them, as well as a little bit about styling and property.
We've all got a story to tell and a story worth sharing, and we love to do that on our podcast. So please continue to give us feedback. And remember, you can find this podcast where you get all good podcasts from,
which includes Spotify, iTunes, the Acast app, or there's a whole lot of other places that you might get your podcast from. You can find us there.
Thank you for joining us for our chat today with Emily, and we look forward to talking again next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.